620 WGN.
Hello, everybody. Karen Conti here. Looking forward to a nice 2 hours with you. We're going to be talking about wills and trusts later in the show. I know everybody hates that topic. Maybe it's you don't like to face your own mortality, but we're going to be talking about why you absolutely need an estate plan and what happens if you don't have one. And if you have any questions, you're going to get a chance to talk to one of the city's experts in the area. But now I've got a really special guest, and this is just really an interesting thing to sit across the opposite side of Brian Noonan. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Karen.
Thank you for hanging out.
Thanks for having me. It's been so long since I've seen you and been in this studio. It seems like seconds ago.
Seems like just.
Well, I'm not used to seeing you from this angle.
Yeah. You know, How do I look?
Kind of about the same.
About the same as I remember
from looking at you for 7 years from that seat to this seat.
You look shorter.
Yeah, I think it's the seat.
Yeah.
I always jack the seat up over there so I have a looming presence. Even though it's radio, I want people to feel the majesty when
yes,
I'm over there.
Yes, and you do a good job of that majesty.
Well, thank you.
So I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about this Michelle Wolf. I didn't even know who she was, but I did listen and watch her correspondence dinner talk. And Cash, can we play a little bit of it for the listeners who maybe didn't see it? And we're playing the clean version or the clean portions. Let's hear it.
And, of course, Megyn Kelly. What would I do without Megyn Kelly? You know, probably be more proud of women. Megyn Kelly got paid $23 million by NBC. Then NBC didn't let Megyn go to the Winter Olympics. Why not? She's so white, cold, and expensive, she might as well be the Winter Olympics. And by the way, Megyn, Santa's black. The weird old guy going through your chimney was Bill O'Reilly.
Okay, so
you guys gotta stop putting Kellyanne on your shows.
Uh-oh, here we go.
All she does is lie. If you don't give her a platform, she has nowhere to lie. It's like that old saying, if a tree falls in the woods, how do we get Kellyanne under that tree? I'm not suggesting she gets hurt, just stuck.
Okay. So, Brian, you watched it.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me what you think about it. Tell me what you think about it, and tell me what you think about the reactions that you saw people have to that.
All right. First of all, I think the whole idea of the correspondence dinner is a bad idea. The correspondents are supposed to be there covering the White House and those politicians, and while it's not set up as an adversarial thing, sometimes it becomes adversarial. So I think this whole, let's all hobnob and pretend we're best friends, is goofy.
Right.
That being said, that dinner is a roast. And if you think back to roasts, like the Dean Martin roasts, now the language may have changed, but the intent is to burn the people on that dais. Burn meaning make fun of them.
Right.
And roasts are cruel. That's the whole purpose of a roast. It's different than going to see somebody do their stand-up routine. You know, doing an act in a club. A roast, you try to be as mean and cutting as possible. That's what it's set up for. The friars do it all the time. And those, you know, they're not for the weak. And you have to be a certain sort of comic to do it. I think the reaction is a little bit hypocritical. I think the reaction is a symptom of what we're going through in this country, where everybody is overly sensitive on both sides. This is not a Republican or Democrat thing. That's why a lot of comics won't play college campuses anymore.
Right.
Because college kids have become so judgmental and so... And I see this sometimes in my own daughter, who should know better, coming from
a comedic,
me.
A comedic
yes.
household. Right,
right.
Right.
You know, and you grew up in the same thing.
I did.
It's a different mentality. And, you know, for people to go, it's not funny. No, you're leaving out two words from that sentence. It's not funny to me. And it's okay if something is not funny to you, but that doesn't mean it's not funny. That means, for whatever reason, you're not amused by it. If you don't like mean humor, you're definitely not going to like any roast.
Brian, you're a stand-up, and you do all different kinds of things. You do MC work. You do acting work. You obviously do radio. When you prepare for a roast, what are you thinking about? How is your preparation different, say, than thinking up a comedy routine? And you talked about it. You're actually trying to criticize and
you find, and I'm not good at roast. I can't do roast. Some of my friends are great at, because they can write that really mean, biting.
Do you have a hard time
comedy.
Being mean?
I have a hard time being that mean.
Yes. Yes.
And it's not that I'm not. It's just you have to walk that line, because if you just went up and were saying mean things, That's not the point. The line that got the most response from Michelle Wolf's thing was about the smoky eye and Sarah Huckabee burning the truth and taking the ashes and making it into makeup. That's a multi-level joke. And then she called back the old Maybelline line. Maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's Maybelline. She changed it. So you have to be able to take the mean and also add the funny.
You know what's interesting is I don't even think that's that mean.
I don't either.
You're just saying she's got smoky eyes because she wears like kind of
she
like
does.
Underline of her eyes.
She wears a lot of eye makeup.
But that's not even that's not even mean. It's not like we're saying she's fat or she's stupid. You know, saying you're saying that Kelly Conway is a liar, that is mean too. But a lot of people are saying that.
Right. It's nothing. It's nothing that hasn't been said before. The problem is you've got different groups. And listen, if you're a woman and you go to a roast and you know you're up there, they're going to make comments about you, your appearance, or you being a woman, or something. That's part of the deal. If you buy the ticket, you've got to play the game. And if you don't want that to happen, for people to say, well, Sarah Sanders sat up there and she's a mom and she, yes, but they weren't talking about her kids. They were making jokes based on her position as the press secretary for this president. That's what she was making jokes about. And every year there's an uproar over this. It doesn't matter who did it. When Stephen Colbert did it, when John Stewart did it, whenever anybody does it, there's uproar after it because he's so mean. Yes.
Do you know what I would do if I were one of the people that I know? If I was going to be roasted, I would be laughing my butt off.
You have to.
Because even if I found it really offensive and I was really upset by it and it really did not make me look like a good person, I would laugh just to make it seem that I had a sense of humor about it. Because when they weren't laughing, I kind of thought they should. That makes them look worse.
Mm-hmm. Then you're a spoiler sport.
Right.
You don't have a sense of humor. And again, everybody has a right to not think those jokes are funny. That's fine. But don't take it to a level where it's an assault on women or it's an assault on this country or suddenly our freedoms are at stake because someone made fun of somebody. Hey, that's what we're supposed to do as comics. That's what we're supposed to do. Any social satirist is going to do that. You tell truth to power.
Well, and
your
little,
version of the
there's
truth.
There's a little truth in all of that stuff.
Yes.
That's what makes it funny to
Come
me.
Come on. Anybody who watches the news knows. And this, listen, when the Democrats were in power, there were people making jokes at their expense too. So you have to be able to look at the emperor and say they have no clothes. You have to be able to do that with some sort of humor involved. And that's what this whole thing is about.
Brian, thank you for joining me. And
you're welcome.
And you get like overtime now, I think, or is this double, triple overtime?
listen, if I get paid for my show, I'm going to be happy. You know, sticking around for an extra few minutes. Good luck now with the calls from people who are like, he doesn't, turn off.
Well,
text.
You'll be gone.
Turn off the text screen.
Yeah, you'll be gone, and you don't have to listen to it.
And again, if I had a dollar for every time I heard that's not funny or that's not, and
right.
You know, we shouldn't always have to say, hey, it's just a joke. Everybody knew that Michelle Wolf was telling jokes. That's what she does. That's what she did when she wrote for Trevor Noah. That's what she does in her stand-up special. That's what she does on her new show on Netflix. She tells jokes.
Right.
You like them, you don't like them, okay. But she's not, she's not single-handedly dismantling America.
No, I don't think so. We have other people who do that, and they're mostly elected.
Right. There's a lot of people doing it. People, and if we, if we start really cracking down on people who tell jokes, it's a bad way to go.
No, it's a slippery slope, as they say.
That's what they say.
Brian,
all right, have a good rest of the show.
Thank you so much for joining me. If you have any questions or comments about what we're talking about, 312-981-7200. I'm going to have Tommy Dreesen, stand-up comic from Chicago. He's going to be calling in from California, and I think he's going to weigh in on it too. Now, he comes from a different standpoint. He's, he's an older stand-up comic back in the days when things were clean, so I'm going to be interested if he has the same reaction or a different one. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. We are talking comedy, and we're talking about, did Michelle Wolf cross over the line in a correspondence dinner? We talked to Brian Noonan, a local stand-up comic, and we have one of Chicago's finest stand-ups calling in from California. Hi, Tommy Dreesen. How are you?
I'm fine, Karen. How you doing?
I appreciate you taking some time away from your precious Cubs game. I know you wanted to start watching it, we appreciate you weighing in here. So, Tom, you've been a comedian for how long? How many years has it been?
This is my 48th year in show business.
Okay. So you've seen the changes over the years. Tell me what you think about this issue. Did she cross the line?
You know, first of all, I'm an ex-GI. I'm a strong supporter of the First Amendment. You can say whatever you want to say. You can do whatever you want to say. That's what this is all about, the First Amendment. You can, if you don't like what people say, you can turn it off. You can not listen to it. You can walk out, do whatever you want to do. But there's some pride that I take in this profession that I've been in for 48 years. If I had to do that correspondence dinner, if I was asked, I would be thinking, how would Johnny Carson do this? How would George Burns? How would Jack Benny? How would Bob Hope? How would some of the comedians that I admired, how would they handle this dinner? And I doubt they would use any of that material. But the young people today were broken in on that material. You know, they go to comedy clubs, you know, when they're 19, 20, 21 years old, and that's the type of material that's being done in all the clubs across the land. And so they say, oh, that is comedy. That's considered comedy. You know, keep in mind when I started out, everywhere you went in America, people say, what do you do for a living? You say, I'm a stand-up comedian. The next question out of their mouth was, oh, yeah, have you ever been on Johnny Carson? If you hadn't been on Johnny Carson in the eyes of America, you weren't a comedian. How'd you get that show? You had to write material that made grandma and grandpa, mom and dad, and the kids laugh. If you worked blue, and you know your father was a comedian, and
right.
You know, I think you would have the same reaction I'm having. You know, we had to learn how to make everybody, you know, keep it, you know, tasteful. You know, that's what, you know, the way we had to work. Then along came cable television, and you could work as filthy as you wanted to work. And come to find out that the filthier people work, the more sitcoms they got. You know,
so. That's funny. Do you think, Tommy, it's harder to work clean?
Oh, absolutely. I can write those kind of jokes all day long. Let me tell you a funny story. I work at the Laugh Factory on weekends. I try out new material in Hollywood all the time. And it's young black, young white, young Latino, young Asian, you know, and you know, the millennials. And I'm always doing clean material in front of them. And it works real well. But one night I was at the Laugh Factory and two young comedians were around the corner and they didn't know I was there. And they were talking about me. One of them said, you know, Tom Dreesen's here. The other one said, oh yeah, you know, he's old school. And the other comedian said, what do you mean he's old school? He said, well, he doesn't use the F word. And the other comedian said, he doesn't use the F word. What does he use for adjectives? And I stuck my head around the corner and I said, adjectives.
That's really funny. You know, so going back to Michelle Wolf and some of the material, I mean, is it the fact that it was blue, or was it the fact that it wasn't funny, or is it the fact that it was mean-spirited? And I guess I'm assuming you've done roasts your whole life, and you've seen the best roasts. You probably watched Rickles do it. You probably watched Dean Martin do it. So what about this was not appropriate in your words?
Well, I did the Dean Martin roast, as a matter of fact, you know, and I worked with Don Rickles on roast, and I've done stag roast, by the way. I can do a stag roast with the best of them, you know, you want to get down. But again, I'm old school. I find it, you know, that kind of material is easy laughter or cheap laughter or nervous laughter, you know, talking about how fat someone is or how skinny someone is or just being just down and out and out blue, you know, just for the sake of being blue, you know. I find it easy material to write. That's, you know, let me put it this way. In your dad's era and as well, when I would watch a comedian before I was a comedian, I would watch a stand-up comedian on the stage and I'd go, wow, that's amazing what that man or that woman's doing. Not everybody can do that. And today I watch some of the young comedians and I say, anybody can do that kind of material.
I kind of feel the same thing. It's almost like some of the comedy is a stream of consciousness about some topic that is just really, you know, makes you uncomfortable. We talked a little bit about before the show about some sex act or something that just makes people not, I mean, it's edgy. But again, to me, and you've said this a million times, the only rule in comedy is be funny. And to me, there's almost a correlation. If the more risque it is and the more offensive it is, the more funny it has to be, kind of. I mean, that's kind of how I feel.
It better be clever.
Yeah.
You know, it just better
it's
be
It's got to have more. It's got to have more than
yeah,
just...
Yeah, and just you know, again, they always think pushing the envelope is saying the F word or something. I'm pushing the envelope, you know, which is not really pushing the envelope. But, again, I say all this, and next week this girl will get her own series. She'll be the hottest thing in Hollywood and be wanting to know if I want to work for her.
Let me ask you, if you are writing, say you were asked to do this dinner and you're writing your roast, is there a place where you say that's too far to go there? Or is everything fair game? Or is it just on a kind of a joke-by-joke basis?
Yeah, you know, first of all, if I asked you this, if I said to you, Johnny Carson, Karen, was he a Democrat or a Republican? If I asked it, you'd say, I don't know.
I would
you know
no
why
idea.
He didn't know? Because he didn't want you to know.
Right.
Because he poked fun at both sides. That we comedians should be trying to bring America together, not dividing America. I mean, that not that we have that political responsibility, but I always like to think the comedians of the past, you know, do you know the Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton revered Bob Hope? I'm guessing Bob Hope was a conservative. I don't know if he was or not. But they revered him as well as Ronald Reagan and you know, Republican presidents like Bob Hope and Johnny Carson, because they poke fun at both sides of the aisle. That correspondence dinner should have done that. That's what the comedian should be doing. Cleverly poking fun at both sides and poking fun at the media. You know, that's part of your job. Not, you know, going up there and having people cringe over your material.
Well, next year, Tommy, I'm putting my vote in for you. You're going to be doing that if I have anything to say. So
I'll be writing for Michelle Wolf next year.
That's what you will be on her new sitcom. Tommy Dreesen, thank you so much for joining us. Go back to the Cubs game, and we'll see you in Chicago. I know you've got some things coming up, and I know you'll join me in the studio when you do.
I will. I'll be there in June and July and be glad to be with you anytime you want me.
All right. Tommy Dreesen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen.
You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. I'm going to take a little diversion here. We're going to talk about Mother's Day. My mother's deceased, and I'm not shopping for Mother's Day, but I want to know what people want for Mother's Day. I want to know, really, what do you want for Mother's Day? I want you to call in here and tell everybody what a really good gift would be, and if anyone has an idea that they've already gone shopping, they've come up with an idea, give us a call here and let us know. 312-981-7200. I think I'm going to go to Cash, my producer. I think your family's in town. Is that right, Cash?
Yeah, my uncle and aunt, and then one of my cousins came down, yeah.
Okay, so have you shopped for your mother yet?
No, not at all.
Okay, that's shameful.
Yeah.
And there's about 7 shopping days left, just so
mm-hmm.
you know, okay?
Yep.
And what are you thinking? I mean, is she even listening tonight, do you think?
No.
Okay, so you can talk freely.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know, because her birthday just passed, like, a week and a half ago.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of difficult. But I think I'm going to go with edible arrangements and get her, like, chocolate-covered strawberries.
Oh, like from Anderson's, candyshop.com.
Exactly.
I just read that. Were you getting hungry thinking about that as I was reading?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
A little bit.
And, Roger, I assume your mother's not still alive, right?
No, Mom passed quite some time ago, even though Dad remarried.
Oh, okay.
And Norma is still alive, though not doing well medically, but she's, you know, Bridget's over there today, in fact. And I'll be working.
As I usually
do on most holidays. But I will squeeze in there a little pre-Mother's Day stuff for my wife, and I know what she'll love.
Which is?
It's not expensive. It's time. It's like, you know, do the dishes, cook, clean, do things that...
Roger.
What?
Those
she
are things,
does love those.
Those are things you should be doing anyway.
I do my share, but
really
she wants me
astounding.
To do her share, and that's fine. I have no problems doing that.
Okay, so you're going to do her share?
Yeah.
Okay.
I already do my share during the week. But the stuff that I normally expect her to do, I will be doing.
This is not sounding good to me. Do you think that's real special? I don't know.
I don't know. Okay, what would you want?
What would I want?
Yeah.
Something I wouldn't ordinarily do for myself, maybe, you know? Or a gift certificate. I mean, I'm an avid reader. I'd probably want, you know, a gift certificate to, you know, on Kindle or Amazon or something kind of, something floofy that I wouldn't do for myself, like getting my nails done or something like that. I don't know.
See, I got my mom a pedicure for her birthday.
Yeah, something where she may not do that for herself, but...
Well, see, Bridget does all that stuff for herself.
Okay.
Yeah, my mom does that stuff.
You see what I'm saying?
Okay, let me go to the lines, and then I've got an interesting idea. Jean, welcome to the Karen Conti Show. What are you doing for your mother?
Hi, are you talking to me?
Oh, yes. I thought you were Jean. I thought you were a male Jean.
Yeah. I'm a senior, and I do hear younger mothers with younger children say they might like to have the day without the kids.
Ah.
And that does really surprise me. You know, because my generation's so traditional. And the other thing I hear again and again and again and again is those of us who are seniors want their children and grandchildren to, if they come to spend the day or part of it or the weekend with them, to leave their phones alone.
Oh, great.
I am so lucky. My son and daughter-in-law will not allow any of that. And they just won't, they think that's the rudest thing in the world, but on my Facebook page, and there's a lot more seniors than there are juniors, that is mentioned so often, and it's really sad. If you're there to visit somebody, they should be front and center of your day.
Completely agree with you. I think we should all hear that. Thank you for the message, Jean. There's something online this week. There was... You know how kids do the doodles and they give them to their parents, and whether it's a turkey for Thanksgiving or I love you, Mom. What these parents are doing is they're taking those scribbles and they're bringing them to a tattoo specialist and they're having them, those things tattooed on their body.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I can't draw.
No, but I mean, neither can these three-year-olds, okay?
Yeah, but that's not...
And so forever, there's this picture of I love Mom with a backward L kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
Well, I'll tell you, because this is a cool thing that our grandkids do at school, and the school does, and I think every school does this, and my wife loves these things. They do a little artwork, like, I love you, Mom, or I love you, Grandma, or I love you, Grandpa, or whatever, and they'll draw the little thing, and then you can put those on anything. Magnets, coffee mugs, clocks.
Not necessarily your left arm.
Right.
No. It's like, not that that kind of a tattoo wouldn't be a loving, wonderful thing.
For 5 minutes.
Until you start screaming. we have all these beautiful coffee mugs from so far, all the years that our grandkids have been in school. We've got two, so we've got double the mugs. And I just love using it every day. Every day I'm reminded of them.
That's nice.
And their love, and how much we miss them when they're not around, and how much we love them even more when they're around us. So
I think, though, that the tattoo would be, not only would it be embarrassing at some point in your life, but it would be embarrassing as a child, right? This is what I did when I was 3 years old, and it's on my mom's back. Like that.
Right, and especially when you get older, like you're around 14 or 15, and grandma or mom comes over and shows your friends, hey, check out my tattoo that my kid did this when she was like 3.
Right.
Yeah, no.
No. Here's another thing that I saw. Okay, I was coming out of DuPage County Court in Wheaton, Illinois, and I'm driving down the road, and I saw a sign that said Angel Kisses in Wheaton, 3D Boutique. So I'm saying to myself, what could this possibly be? And so I Googled it, and it was a spa for pregnant women. You go in there, and they have your little one captured on, ultrasound. So you have your ultrasound, and you have these pictures made of your little baby. You're determining, you know, if it's a boy or a girl, the little baby's, you know, moving around, and then they can take that, give you pictures of it. I think they put it in a scrapbook, and they put it on plates and things like that. And it's a spa for ultrasound pictures. It's like photography in vitro.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's
what do you think? I think that's... I
like that.
Yeah.
Here's something I saw a long time ago, since you're talking about pictures and stuff, is they, and being in radio, we think this is kind of cool, but the sound wave, the actual sound wave pattern of your child saying, Mommy. And they would put underneath the words Mommy in quotes, but it's the sound wave pattern as a portrait, as a picture.
Mm. People get the tattoo of the sound wave.
Oh,
and
really?
Then with you, yeah, you can get the sound wave tattooed, and then once you hold an app with the phone
over it,
it'll play it back for you to hear the person's voice.
Oh, my goodness.
One of my best friends did that with her grandma's voice when her grandma passed away.
Oh.
These are all very interesting ideas. And then there's flowers.
My mom doesn't
last
like flowers.
Second.
No, I know flowers.
Gifts.
Yeah.
Last second gift.
Yeah, you went to Walgreens and you got the little Fannie Mae candies. Yeah, we
it's
know.
It's hard getting your mom a gift when you get older. Like, when you're little, you can just draw something and put it on a mug and it's cute. But if I drew something and put it on my mug, my mom would be like, what is this?
That's right.
You can't draw.
Think before you buy. You've got 7 shopping days left. Be good to mom. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show. When we come back, we're going to be talking with one of the top experts in the city on the issue of estate planning, wills and trust. Tim Carroll is going to join us and tell us the disasters that can happen when you don't have an estate plan. And we're going to be taking your calls. So if you have questions about your will, your trust, probate, all of those issues, please give us a call here, 312-981-7200. Welcome back. It's the Karen Conti Show. Let's talk about estate planning and wills. One of the most experienced estate planning lawyers in the city is Tim Carroll. He represents individual families, corporate executives. He's a partner at Harrison and Held, Carroll and Wall, a former partner at Winston & Strawn. He has over 30 years of experience, and I've known Tim for at least 30 of those years. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me here.
Let's start out with, why do we need an estate plan? Why do we need a will, trust, or some kind of plan for when we die?
Well, everyone has an estate plan, whether they know it or not. Those of us who have got it in writing and have signed it, and those who have done nothing, there's an estate plan, because if you haven't determined it yourself, if you haven't put it down in writing, the state does decide who will get your assets. And there can be big surprises and a lot of additional expenses when you don't do it yourself.
And I don't mean to scare people, but I do think there are certain things in life that make you a responsible human being. And nobody likes to think about their death. Nobody likes to, you know, pay the money to have a lawyer do this. But tell us some stories about what happens when you don't have an estate plan. And I could throw in a few, too.
Sure. A few years back, a case came in. It was a husband and wife in their mid-80s. His name was Tom. Her name was Mary. Modest estate. Mary was sickly. Tom owned the home, and he had a bank account and some modest financial investments, so he could take care of things. Tom unexpectedly died. Now, when you're in your mid-80s, I'm not sure what they were expecting, but that may be a different topic. They had a daughter. She had predeceased them. She had a son. He was in his early 20s at the time, lived out in California, had nothing to do with his grandparents other than occasionally calling them and haranguing them to try to get money out of them,
right,
which they wouldn't give. He actually turned out he was a member of a motorcycle gang out there, if that kind of embellishes the sort of person he was.
Okay.
Mary was surprised to find out that of the estate passing from Tom, she got half of it. And their favorite grandson got the other half.
Yeah. And just that nothing is more horrible than something like that. I mean, even just complications. I had a guy who works in my building said, you know, his mother died several years ago, and there were a bunch of kids, and there's a house. That's all there was. But the kids can't decide what to do with the house, and now they're going to have to open up a probate estate, and they're going to have to go through litigation over a house that really is modest, and it may very well be that the legal fees eat up a good portion of what that house is worth, and it could easily have been resolved by just having a simple trust or even some sort of paperwork to prepare that for that.
Yeah, that's right. Among expenses, there are surety bonds, additional cost of an executor, attorney's fees.
Right.
I like to talk about this area because it lets me name drop. a number of years ago, I represented the estate of Chris Farley. You may remember Saturday Night Live and Tommy Boy and things like that. Chris tragically died as a young man in his early 30s. He wasn't married, didn't have any children, had a nice-sized estate. And I can talk about parts of it because it's all public record,
because he
didn't have a will.
Oh, okay.
His father was named as his administrator. The assets under state law were going to pass to his parents and brothers and sisters. And we'll assume, maybe Chris was okay with that. But the first check we wrote out of that estate was to an insurance company to provide a surety bond for his father to act as administrator to ensure that the father wouldn't steal the money from himself and the rest of the family. That check was for many thousands of dollars. We had to write that check. Every year the estate was open, and his type of estate was more complicated. It was open for multiple years. I've often said if Chris had a simple will, a three-sentence will, we could have avoided that. If his will said, I leave my assets to my parents, brothers, and sisters, they got it.
Right.
I name my father my executor. Father was named administrator. Sentence number three, I waive the requirement to get a surety bond for my executor.
That's all you had to say.
That's all he had to do, and he would have saved many tens of thousands of dollars in that estate. So, yeah, so it can be very expensive passing through the probate system if you don't have a will to facilitate it, because a will doesn't keep you out of probate. It facilitates going through.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about the details of that. And I guess, you know, off the mic, I asked you, Tim, I think some people, I get a lot of calls, and I refer to people like you all the time, and I know that people don't always call. They get the information, they say they're going to call, and they don't. And I don't have any problem with that. You can ask me for a referral. I'm always happy to give you a referral. But the question is, why aren't you calling? And, you know, if it's personal injury or something else, they always do call. Mm-hmm. But I wonder, what is it that people don't want to deal with their estate plan?
Well, part of it is mortality.
I think that's probably it.
There were, rumors many years ago that many tradespeople thought it was bad luck to get a will, that so many tradespeople didn't have wills. Now, whether that's still accurate today or not, I don't know. But there is that aversion to dealing with
right.
your own mortality.
Yeah. And the cost, you know, I mean, I think people resent having to spend a few thousand dollars for something that they don't think benefits them, you know, when what they're going to create in a lot of cases is massive confusion and a lot more expenses down the line.
That's correct. It's getting the advice from a lawyer, someone who's practiced in this area and can provide the knowledge to help you think through what you want to do to make sure that if there are going to be conflicts, they can be minimized. It's worth every dollar, because you don't get a second chance. You're dead when your will is being read.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that I see, Tim, and I'm sure you have stories and stories and stories and all over the years that you've done this, but, you know, when you have children always have, there's a little rivalry, right? There's always some little tug of, you like, mom liked you best, and, you know, all that stuff. And when money is there, and there's no estate plan, and there's a fight about it, and I'm telling you, those things come out, and they sever relationships forever.
That's right.
It's and for all the things that you do to bring your family together, to encourage them to be loving family members, and to get them together, by not having an estate plan, you can ruin that.
When the parents aren't there, the kids are going to fight, especially if it's over money.
Right.
And if you got...
Or things.
Or things. Oh, yeah. So often it's the personal property that causes the initial division in the family, and then the overall costs and expenses for fighting over it is what has destroyed families. I've had judges in settlement saying, look, if you want to spend your inheritance on lawyers, that's your business, but here's your opportunity to settle, people. You got to give in.
And I find that family members, it's sort of like divorce work in some way, because you have these ongoing resentments, and instead of just seeing clearly, I need to just settle this, I need to move on with my life, I need to just do what's, just efficient and cost-effective, you see them continue to litigate because you're right and he's wrong. And that's just a bad dynamic.
And it's principle they're arguing over, and
right.
you're never going to settle, and therefore it's going to cost them.
Absolutely. I'm going to ask you one question, and then we're going to go to break. And I'm going to give out our numbers, because I know you have questions for Tim. This is the time to get some answers to some of your questions. We can't give you specific legal advice, but we can give you some parameters and some ideas about how you should be thinking about these issues. 312-981-7200, or text to that number, 312-981-7200. in a very short period of time, these online resources to draft a will online, yay or nay? I know you're a lawyer and you're going to say no, but tell everybody why you shouldn't do that.
Karen, there's all sorts of kits you can get online. In fact, I have clients who are involved in aviation who can get kits to buy their to build their own airplanes. And they have built their own airplanes, which they fly across the country. I got one of those kits, Karen, and I built one. Now, I know nothing about flying, but I have this airplane, and tonight will be our maiden voyage. I'd like to invite you on that flight with me. I've never flown an airplane, but I do drive a car. It can't be that much different. Would you get on that flight?
I think not. Okay. I think,
yeah. Because there's no second chance.
Yeah.
So if the plane goes down, we can't fix it. If you've got a will that you did yourself and it doesn't work, we don't hear it speak until after you've died. Here's a little story, about that sort of a problem. We had the mother and father and their daughter. The mother had died about 5 years earlier before this case came before us. The daughter and the father went online, got themselves a product and put it together, signed, leaving everything to her. And, you know, that's what they wanted or what the father wanted, I'm sure, although I never met him. At the time that it was signed, she acted as one of the witnesses.
Oh.
Now, I'm still saying, well, that still can work under Illinois law. However, it turned out he wasn't really dad. He was stepdad.
Oh.
And she had no blood relation to him. She got nothing out of that estate. And she had devoted her life to taking care of her parents. She didn't work as much. She was in her mid-50s at the time. She was far from getting her Social Security, which was going to be minimal anyway. And the father's relatives were from Eastern Europe. She had to get out of the house.
Ugh. So don't do it.
Yeah, that's right. I won't tell you the actual tragic ending, which was even worse about 6 months later. You can guess what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, she didn't want to live under these circumstances.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's really terrible. So
yes.
If we didn't scare you on a happy note, give us a call here, 312-981-7200. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. We're talking estate planning. We're talking about wills and trusts. And what are you going to do with your stuff when you die? It's important. This is all important stuff. And we're taking your calls here, 312-981-7200. Tim Carroll is the best in the West. He's a fantastic lawyer in this area. He knows his stuff, and he's going to be answering your questions. Let's go to Chuck. Hi, Chuck. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question for Tim?
Now, my what I own is a small, modest home and a small savings account. And I'm wondering, it would be very simple, well, I'm wondering how much in dollars and cents should I expect to spend.
Okay, Chuck, I'm going to have Tim answer this, and again, we're not going to give specific advice because if Tim were actually giving you advice, he would probably ask you a lot of questions and get more details. But what's your just general idea about what kind of estate plan Chuck would need?
Right. So there's.
Oops, sorry. Go ahead. Go.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Hi, Chuck. The problem is Chuck hasn't told us anything about his beneficiaries and whether he's going to have something simple going to family or whether he's going to spread it out, that all takes time and effort, and that's what a lawyer charges for, the time and effort they're putting into it. What I would suggest, Chuck, is that you call some local attorneys near you and ask them, you can give them more specific information, and they can tell you what they would charge. Lawyers charge differently. They have different rates depending on their level of skill in a particular area. Someone who's a general lawyer doing a general practice is probably going to have a lower rate than someone who specializes in an area and can give you a higher, more sophisticated answer to your questions. But you know, it sounds like what you're looking for is something simple, you know, something that's going to be inexpensive. call a couple attorneys in your area, and you can call the Chicago Bar Association to get referrals to people in your area that can help you and can talk to you about what you might want to get done.
Okay.
Because all I have are two children who I haven't seen in 30 years.
I mean, Tim, I don't mean to put you on the spot because, you know, you do different kinds of things on different levels. Yeah. But, I mean, what could you expect, a range? I mean, are we talking about $100? Are we talking about $2,000?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, somewhere between there, Karen, and that's probably the best answer I can give, because if you're talking to me, Chuck, we're not going to just deal with a will. You probably need powers of attorney. You probably need other estate planning documents. And, in fact, depending on your assets, it might make more sense for you to pay more money and get a living trust and avoid probate. So you're getting into a whole higher level. If it's a will with some powers of attorney, I would think in the $1,000 range.
Yeah.
You know, if you're up to a living trust level, which is going to be somewhat more complex, you're going to be probably three times that amount.
And that would save money, I suppose, in the future. But thank you for your call, Chuck. And we're going to talk a little bit about powers of attorney, because those are very important as well. But I want to get to the phone lines here. June has been holding. Welcome to WGN. Hi, June.
Hi, Karen. Well, your discussion has raised a question in my mind.
Okay.
A number of years ago, my husband and I saw an attorney. We had a will and a trust done. And my husband died 4 years ago. Now, listening to you guys, I'm wondering whether I should go and see the attorney. Is there an updating I should do? The beneficiaries are staying the same. The bequests are staying the same. There'd be no essential changes, you know, that I would make. What would your advice be?
Thank you, Jim. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, we can't tell you whether to update a document without looking at the document. There's one big change, is that your husband's no longer here. I think that what you might want to consider is talking to someone potentially once again about a living trust, because between you and your husband, I'm guessing you did not have probate proceedings when he died?
No, there is a trust in place.
Okay.
Oh, so now we have, so you have a trust.
Right.
I would want to look at it, so I would recommend that you have someone look at it, spend the money, get it done correctly. In fact, clearly, it hasn't been done for 4 years. The Illinois legislature changed our health care powers of attorney a few years back. They're significantly different than they were in the past. And so those sort of things need to be looked at on a relatively regular basis.
And I think I would recommend, and Tim, you have to tell me, but to go back to the lawyer who drafted it, because, you know, and I think it's a good thought for everyone out there to make sure that your will and your trust are updated when life events happen, when people die, when children, maybe you're rethinking who you're going to leave your money to, those kinds of things. You just want someone to read it to make sure that it still does what you want it to do.
That's couldn't be said better.
All right, thank you, June. All right, take care. Let's,
you
know what, we're going to take a break, and when we go come back, I want to talk a little more details about powers of attorney and what's a will, what's a living trust, what is probate, why do we want to avoid it. You're listening to Karen Conti. I'm talking to Tim Carroll about estate planning on WGN. Taking your calls. Now we're doing all calls about any kind of legal issue that you have. We have one of the best estate planning lawyers in the city of Chicago here with us. So if you have a question about a will, estate, a power of attorney, living trust, Tim Carroll will be here to answer those questions. But I can answer other questions. If you have family law issues, child support, you have criminal issues, small claims court, give me a call here, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And if you don't want to have me answer these questions on the air, if you like some privacy, you can always give me a call at the office. And the number there is 312-332-7800. And better yet, email me at wgn@askkarenconti.com. Tim, thank you for being here. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what is an estate plan? Basically, what's a will, what's a living trust, and what is probate, and why do we want to avoid it?
Sure. A will is a statement that a person signs saying, when I die, here's what I want to have happen. If I sign a will and then I die, the will is submitted to court. cases open, just like any of your litigation cases that you get involved in, and a judge is assigned to the case to oversee the transmission of my assets to my beneficiaries. So that's what a will does. A will, as we talked about earlier, facilitates giving authority to a person to execute my wishes. That person's called an executor in Illinois.
Okay.
And the executor can act with a will, is given a lot of power and authority that they don't have to constantly go back to the judge and get approval of actions that they want to take. There's no will, they're constantly going into court having the judges give them approval.
Okay, and what's a trust?
Technically a trust is a contract, but it's an entity that you create while you're alive so that instead of having my investment account or your investment account in the name of Karen Conti, it's in the name of Karen Conti, trustee of the Karen Conti Trust. You've signed a document with yourself. It's a contract in which you say, as trustee, I'm going to take control of these funds. And what happens is that because the assets are not in the name of Karen Conti, when you pass away, the courts say, well, we have no jurisdiction. We don't need to deal with these assets. Whatever she wrote in that contract, in that trust, is what will happen, and the state has no interest in overseeing the way that the property passes.
So I'm just going to say this real basically, that the trust then operates on its own. So when you die, all of the assets are put into this barrel. You know, I think of it as a physical barrel, and all of the stuff there, it's all the trust determines how it's to be divided up, and the whether it goes to beneficiaries, whether bills get paid from that money, and all of those things happen by themselves, as opposed to having a judge and a courtroom decide that.
That's correct. If it's done by a will, a judge is going to oversee all those activities, the payment of the bills and the distribution. If it's done in a trust, it's done without court supervision.
Now, people come to me and they say, do I need a will and a trust? Do I need a will or a trust? And a lot of times an estate plan will provide for both. Why is that necessary, Tim?
Right. Before I answer that, often people will say to me, I have a will, therefore I don't have to go through probate. That's uh-huh. why I signed my will, and that's a misconception that the will, as I mentioned, facilitates going through probate. Whenever we do a trust, and we commonly refer to these things as living trusts for people, we always have a will because you need a will to clean up what you didn't get into your trust at the time you were alive. So now that I've died, even though I won't have to put that will into probate, but the will says, my personal property become part of my trust, or my cash, my checking account that I didn't put into the trust because I didn't want to deal with my checking account in the trust. Some assets can stay out of the trust. Illinois has a $100,000 threshold before you have to go to probate. So I can have my checking account with $2,000 in it or $25,000 in it just in my name, and then at the time I die, my will says it goes to my trust, and I don't have to have a judge supervise having it go in. Illinois has what's called an affidavit process, sometimes called the small estate affidavit. If an estate is under $100,000, you can transfer, if the total is under $100,000, you can transfer assets using an affidavit rather than having to have a judge supervise it.
So just suffice to say that these are two tools that work together to basically facilitate the transfer of your assets to your beneficiaries. And it's kind of a common thing to have both of them.
Absolutely. You should have both.
Right.
You should have that will that simply says, whatever I didn't get in my trust when I was alive, put it in now that I've died.
Exactly. Lewis, thank you for holding. You have a good question. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much. Hey, I just had a couple of questions. One was, over the years, I don't have any property or anything, but over the years, I have various investments, 401k and so on, and life insurance, and all those had, like, beneficiaries designated on them, but I might have put one of my sisters, or I have five siblings. So I just am wondering, is it better to go back and change those beneficiaries to read my estate so that and eventually if I go ahead and do a will, we can just divide up the property evenly between siblings and nieces and nephews and things? Or is it, do you need to do that, or can you just designate that in your will? If they have specific beneficiaries already, what supersedes, you know, each other on that?
Yeah. Lewis, that's a really good question, and again, we're going to talk generally here about...
Generally.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, because there are tax implications to what you're asking, Lewis, so that has to be looked at specifically. However, the general rule is that you want to keep IRAs, 401ks out of a probate estate, and that's what you're talking about, putting it into your estate. I think you should talk to someone about working with a living trust, putting something like that together for you. Once again, probably don't want the 401k going in there, but insurance can pass through there and help consolidate your assets so that you have a fund to pay your bills, because you have to get that your bills paid at the time you die too before it gets
right.
The assets get paid
yeah,
out.
Yeah, and so you can't forget about that because if it all goes to the beneficiaries upon your death, and you have funeral expenses or you have credit card statements that are outstanding, that none of that goes to pay them.
Right, and having insurance payable to your estate takes an asset that typically is exempt from creditors and makes it subject to creditors.
Right.
The retirement funds. Where you might be able or might qualify for stretch payouts to the beneficiaries, if it comes through an estate, you may not qualify for that. So that depends on the circumstances.
So even in a case that sounds pretty simple, Lewis, there's much more to the answer than what you're asking, really.
Yeah, I guess I could see that, and I also see I need obviously to come and do some in inquiry here. The other question I have then is, if I do make an appointment, let's say to see you, what information do you want people to bring in to prepare in advance that would make the visit better?
Great question. Go ahead. I'm going to put you on hold and you can listen to the answer. Thank you for your call, Lewis. Okay.
If you contacted our firm, we would send you a questionnaire to fill out. It would include a part to give us family information and part to give us financial information. So then that entails all the information that is needed. And then there are special circumstances you need to think about. But, you know, who do you want to have act as your executor, depending on what your family situation is? And, you know, do you want a family? Do you want an institution? Things like that. But there are financial statements that need to be completed and family information that we request get sent to us before we meet
and
with
I
people.
Think that's standard that most lawyers will send something out just because it gets you thinking about these things, and it kind of sets forth your assets all together and those types of things. Let's take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit about who should you pick as an executor, and again, we're going to be talking about powers of attorney and who should you pick as your agent to make very important decisions for you, like your medical decisions and your financial decisions if you are incapacitated. Very important issues. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show. Give us a call here if you have questions on this topic or any other legal topic. We'll be taking them all the way to 9 o'clock. 312-981-7200.
Your lawyer called and said he had the papers all prepared. To sign my name was all.
Okay, that's enough of that song. We're taking your calls here on WGN. Give us a call. We're talking to Tim Carroll about estate planning, but we're taking calls about any other legal question you might have. 312-981-7200. I've got some phoners and I've got some texts we're going to be talking about. Let's go to Norman. Norman, hi. Welcome to WGN. What's your question?
Yes. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
I just have a quick question. It deals with credit cards. My wife passed away not too many days ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And thank you. And I knew she had 3 credit cards, but my name was not on any of them. But she left a credit card collection pile to be paid of approximately $25,000. My question is, am I liable for that now?
That's a good question, Norman. I get that question all the time. Tim, I'll let you answer that. I'm going to put you on hold and you can listen.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Norman.
Well, general. Okay, am I on?
Yep,
okay.
You are.
generally, if he's not signed, if he hasn't signed the agreement, he doesn't have liability. I think that he needs to go talk to a lawyer about it, though. Let's find the specifics. General rule, your spouse's debts are your spouse's debts. They're not your own.
Okay, so hopefully that he won't be responsible for that.
Right, yeah.
Great. You know, I'm going to try to read this text. It comes in from a 331 number. I don't know where that is. Hi, Karen, a state question for you. Mom passed away in January of last year. She had a will, and her assets included a house. The house has been sold. We have an estate lawyer who's supposed to be representing us. Everything has been a battle with her. We don't know if anything has been filed in court. How do I find out if anything has been filed? Is it in our best interest to get a different lawyer? All bills, on more than one occasion, she gave us some bad advice, and now she's trying to bill us. So, obviously, it's hard, and I'm just going to speak for Tim on this. We don't know if a lawyer is doing a good job or not, because we didn't need to know a whole lot of other things to give that answer. And sometimes your frustration is that things take a long time in the court process, and that's a frustration that may not be your lawyer's, comes from your lawyer's fault. So, Tim, what do you have to comment on?
They can go to court and go get the court file to see if something's been filed. So they can take that step, and if nothing's filed, they can decide what their next step should be. If they believe these documents should have been filed with the court and they're not, and an attorney has told them that they have been filed, I would hope that there's just some misunderstanding there, but I think they need to talk to another lawyer and find out, get a second opinion as to what's going on.
And just so you know, and that's a good point, Tim, that if it's filed in court, court is always a public record. So you'd probably go to the county where your mother resided, and you can go into the courthouse and do this, and sometimes it's online, but you have to kind of know what you're doing. But like Dorothy Brown, the clerk of court, has a website. You can go probably to the probate division and plug in names and see if you can see if the will was filed. And sometimes that's not the easiest to navigate. Sometimes you might want to just go into the courthouse and go to the floor where the files are kept and see if you can get a hard copy of the file.
Right, just talk to the clerk.
Yeah, it's usually pretty helpful. Yeah. Great. Let's go to Trish. Trish, welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Thanks, Karen, for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband was in Rogers Park on Saturday. And he stopped at a small business shop, and he asked where he could park. And he said, the man who owned the shop said, I have an agreement with the funeral home across the street. Go ahead and park there. As they said, as long as there was no funerals, the man could use the parking space. So my husband parked there. He was there 5 minutes, and Lincoln Towing came and took our car. And the thing was, is not only did they take the car, but they damaged the car in the process. They had to pull the car out of the space, not from the side, not from in front or the back. And they actually grabbed all of our exhaust system.
So, how much in damages are we talking about? Over $1,000?
Well, we don't know yet because it happened on Saturday, so we have to take it to the dealer tomorrow. So we're $218 to get it out of Lincoln Towing. And we have a lot of sensors going off in the car right now, so I'm not really sure. But how should we proceed?
Well, I think you should just get your car back. I think you should go to get an estimate as to what the repair costs would be. I think you need to put everything in writing. I'm going to say this a million times, but some people make calls and then there's no record of it. So it's very important that you put these things in writing. And email's fine. I think you should send an email to the business and say, you gave us permission here and they came and towed it. Our car was damaged, and see what they are willing to do. I would also go out and take a look at the sign. Was there a sign that clearly said, you know, only customers from this business, all of this would be towed, and you should definitely take a picture of that so you know exactly what we're dealing with. And then finally, as far as the towing company, if they damaged your car, they are responsible for that, because they're not supposed to damage the car. And they may have a policy on how that's handled. You may have to fill out an insurance claim with them. But don't be surprised if neither the business nor the tow company is going to help you. And depending on how much your expenses are and your out-of-pocket is, you may need to file a small claim. And is it worth it over $2,000 to go to court on your own and spend the time and the energy to sue these people? That's something that you would need to make a decision about at that point. But obviously, hiring a lawyer for $2,000 or $3,000 does not make any sense because lawyers are very expensive and it wouldn't be cost-benefit to do that.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Well, thanks. Okay. Really appreciate it. Okay. Good luck.
Let's go to Ruth. Hi, Ruth. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Yes, I was just wondering, you know, when you do make a will or a trust, where do you leave that? Do you leave it with your lawyer? Or is there some kind of a, you know, court or something you file so when you die?
Great question, Ruth. I think that's an excellent question. I'm going to have Tim answer that.
Thank you.
I'm going to put you on hold. Go ahead.
Yeah, in Illinois, you do not file a will until you have died. So there is no official state, county depository to put it. Ideally, everyone would have a safe deposit box, and they could put it in there because that's the safest place. If the will is not a controversial will and you have a place in your home where you keep your important records, your house records, things like that, that's probably a reasonable place to put it. You can buy little safes that you can put in your home that are fireproof. Although if there's a fire, I'm sure the safe will survive, but I'm not sure if you open it up, what are they going to look like?
Tim, is it a good idea if you have an executor or somebody who you've appointed, is it a good idea to give that person the will? If you don't mind them knowing ahead of time what your plan is?
If you don't mind them knowing, and if you are going to rely on the fact that you probably won't change executors, and then you have that slightly embarrassing arrangement of, oh, you were my executor, but you're not now, so would you give me back that copy of the will, I suppose it would be.
I mean, just generally speaking, isn't it, I love organization, and when someone dies, and I've had family members die, and there's different levels of organization, but it's really nice to go to a box that has the will, that has the deed to the house, that has the investments, the lists of all of the bank accounts, statements.
Life insurance policies.
Life insurance policies, all of those things in one place. So, and maybe even now, passwords, right? We want to have, if I want to access an account online, I'd really like to know what these passwords are. So all of these things, you should take some moments to do that and put it all in one place. And if you have a trusted person who knows where that is, so when you die, it's easily available.
That's correct.
Okay. Yep. Make it easy for the people who live. But thank you for the call. That's a good question. Let's just go back, Tim, and circle back and let's talk about.
Karen, I do want to elaborate one moment on where you put the will. If it's in your home, there are those who say the safest place in your home to have an important document is your freezer.
Oh, interesting.
It's the most likely place to survive a fire.
Oh, yeah, I like so, that. Yeah. That is yours in there, Tim, along with your deer meat from your last hunt? No, I'm just kidding. I'll come over for dinner and see what you're doing. Let's talk about powers of attorney. And these are very important things because they dictate what happens if you become disabled in some way. Let's talk about what that means.
Sure. So your will deals with what happens after you die. Your living trust will deal with what happens while you're alive and after you die. If you don't have a living trust, and even if you do have a living trust, you can appoint someone to handle your financial matters or your health care matters. So we have two different types of powers of attorney. So we'll start with the one that's called the property power of attorney. And one of the earlier callers made the comment, I have no property, I just have some bank accounts and investments. Well, property is used in the large generic sense, and it means everything. It's not limited to real estate. So the Illinois power of attorney for property allows you to designate an agent to sign on your bank account, to deal with your retirement funds, to collect your paycheck if you're unable to do it, to deal with all the things you could do if you were there yourself, and you obviously want to select someone that you trust, and that person has all of your powers. It doesn't mean you've given your powers away. You keep your powers, but that person also has the power. Illinois also has what they call a springing power of attorney. And the springing power of attorney means that it's not effective unless a certain event occurs. And often that's my doctor has determined that I'm incapacitated. And at that point, then my agent can start acting for me.
We're going to take a break, but I want to talk about the importance of whom you choose and what those considerations are, because as I'm sure you see all the time, people come to you with their executor or the agent on a power of attorney who may be doing bad things. And the choice of that person may not have been the wisest one, and that can cause problems as well.
That's correct.
You're listening to the Karen Conti Show. Give us a call. We've got 15 minutes left, 312-981-7200. And Tim Carroll, who is the expert here in estate planning, if people want to get a hold of you, how would they get a hold of you?
They would call my office, 312-214-9000.
Okay. And Tim Carroll, can you give a website?
Harrison and Held.
HarrisonandHeld.com. Yeah. Okay, great. 312-981-7200. You're listening to Karen Conti Show.
On this side of the law, on that side of the law, who is right, who is wrong, who is for and who's against the law?
Welcome back. We've got a few minutes left for legal questions, 312-981-7200, and we're here with Tim Carroll talking about estate planning. And I want to ask you that question. You're picking the person who's going to be your agent for a power of attorney to make decisions about your finances if you're incapacitated, or someone who's going to be the executor of your will, who's going to be gathering up your assets and writing checks and doing all these things. What are some of the qualities that you're looking for in a person to do this work?
Common sense.
Yeah. To realize, hey, I'm not a investment person. I don't know when to buy and when to sell whatever the asset may be, but I can go get a professional, talk to them, and get good advice. So it's the person you trust in your family, in your life, and the one who has the common sense. Sometimes you call that business sense, but it's just the common sense to realize where I don't have the capacity or the expertise to do something well, I'll go and hire someone to get it done.
I see a lot of people will call me and say, oh, my brother's the executor. I think he's taking money from dad. He's driving around in a nice car. I want access and he won't give it to me. And I guess all the years of answering those questions, I want to add, and I don't know if you agree with this, but maybe, you know, you should pick an executor who's really strong, because you're going to come up against some very difficult decisions, like mom now needs to go into a nursing home. And no, she's not going to give you a loan for a car because you're 40 years old and you have a job. And she needs her money for her future. And you're going to have to be very, very strong and do some things that may not be popular among your siblings.
Yes, both executor and trustee, someone who's managing the funds over time for the children or whoever the beneficiary is. They've got to say no from time to time. So it's you have to have a strong personality, and yet you have to have a caring personality, because you want to make sure that you're doing things, you're acting in a fiduciary capacity and acting in the best interest of the beneficiary and not simply playing God with the beneficiary.
Right. And just talk a little bit about the power of attorney for health care.
Sure.
So we talked about the power of attorney for property, meaning
financial,
yeah. Your assets and conducting your business in the event of your incapacitation. But what about the power of attorney for healthcare?
Sure. The power of attorney for healthcare gives the trusted person the authority to say to the doctor, I'm incapacitated, because as long as I have capacity, regardless of who I've named, I can override whatever decision they try to impose upon me if I don't like it. And you see that situation, and they're rare situations, but the doctor's saying to you in the bed that we can try all of these new combinations, the cocktails, formula to try to keep you alive, but it's not going to be very pleasant for you, and you say, no, I don't want that. And the person with your power of attorney who loves you very dearly saying, yes, we're going to do it, we're going to keep you alive. You say, no, I'm simply overriding you. But if I'm in a coma now that person is the one who says to that the doctor, perform the transfusion, perform the operation, or ultimately stop treatment.
So this is very important for directing the medical people and to know what level of resuscitation, et cetera, that you want.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
All very, very, very important things.
And a healthcare power of attorney is different than a do not resuscitate, the DNR, because people come to me and say, I want to have that DNR. And I say, no, you don't. You want a healthcare power which directs someone to make decisions for you at that time when you're incapacitated and you can't. But if you had a heart attack, I think you want us to save you. And the DNR says, if I have a heart attack, don't save me.
Right, yeah. Right. Now, there's been a change in state taxes. Is that right?
That's correct. At one time, if you go back, not that long ago, but go back about to the year 2000, you had both a federal and a state exemption from the death tax of $675,000. Today, the state of Illinois exemption is $4 million. The federal government this year increased their exemption to roughly $11.2 million per person. So the good news is, you know, the inevitability of death and taxes, the tax part of that is not going to reach a lot of people, but we can't do anything about death.
The death part.
You know?
That's right. This is, and I think we touched on this just a little bit in one of the caller's questions, but I get this all the time, and as I'm sure you do. You know, my uncle passed away. I know he left me in the will, but my other sister is the one who's doing all the work, and she's the executor, and I haven't heard anything, and I haven't gotten any notices, and it looks like I'm not getting any money, but I think I'm getting, you know, I'm getting the raw end of this. What do you do if you think you're an heir, or maybe you saw a document saying you were an heir, and you're not getting any notice of the proceedings in court or otherwise?
Well, if it's in court, that's the easiest situation, because you can go to court and get a copy of the will that was filed. And under Illinois law, although we have this thing, without getting real technical here, called independent administration, where the executor doesn't have to do a lot of filings in court, you always go to court and undo that. And if you're a beneficiary, and require that all the filings actually be made in court so you can review them.
So that's the way to do it. But yeah. Otherwise, yeah. If you just suspect that you might be, there's really no way to rectify that, is
no,
there?
Right. No, that's a litigation type issue.
Yeah.
And so you'll find out what happens by going through discovery, but you don't get to discovery unless you file a lawsuit, and you better not file a frivolous lawsuit. You better have some evidentiary basis for the allegations that you'd have to make, that I think my sister is taking the money from the estate, that there's some kind of waste or fraud or embezzlement or something like that.
So if you had a copy of the trust or will that was dated 6 months before and now you're not in it, you know, so, you know, that would be good evidence of perhaps.
That would be terrific, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
something like that certainly is going to open people's eyes.
But otherwise, that's hard to, you can't just snap your fingers and you hire a lawyer, and if I sent a letter, I mean, no one has to answer that. There's got to be litigation, meaning there has to be a lawsuit filed in order to get access to the information.
Right. And what lawyers learn is that there are two sides to every story, because you hear one side from your client and they think this is the truth and therefore everyone's going to agree with them. And as soon as that's presented, you start hearing the other side of the story, which is, no, my uncle who had a will, he changed it 6 months before he died, but he died unexpectedly, and he eliminated someone because they hadn't talked to him for 40
exactly.
years.
Exactly. Yeah. People change their minds, and they're entitled to do that.
That's right.
Tim Carroll, thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to give out your numbers again. If people need to reach you and they want an estate plan and they want it done the right way, they're going to call you at
312-214-9000.
And the website, just roughly, if you can, even if it's just giving me the name of your law firm.
HarrisonHeld.com.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
All right. You know, I want to say, I'm not going to gloat about this, okay? I'm not a gloater. I'm not a sore winner. Jerry's nodding his head saying, oh, yes, you are. I picked the Kentucky Derby winner. And now, listen, it wasn't just because it was the favored horse, because I didn't even know it was the favored horse. I picked it because the name was Justify. And that seems like a good legal word, right? That's like one of the best legal words in the world. I won. I won $6 from Jerry and my best friend Kathy, and I had a mint julep in celebration. But just wanted to let everybody know that.
Next time, can I have you pick my horses?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have really good methods, Roger.
With the name? I like that.
Actually, I know how to read a racing sheet. I do. I know a little bit about
this.
I do. Yeah, my dad used to take me to the racetrack. He would tell my mother we were going to the petting zoo. And
there were animals there.
Go to the racetrack, and my mother would ask what animal I petted. I go, I petted a horse.
There you go.
Oh, that was just really deceptive. Anyway, thank you for joining us. It's Karen Conti on WGN.